Hey dads, other listeners. This is Tom, and I'm recording a special introduction to this episode before we release it, March 5th. As you know, we're releasing these episodes a few months after we've recorded them. The editing process takes some time, and it took us a while to start releasing them once we had some in the can. Shortly after we recorded this episode, a dear friend of mine passed away after an unbelievably long battle with metastatic melanoma. We mention her in this episode, talk some stories about her. We've told a couple in the past, and my guess is there will be some in the future. I do not want this intro to sound like an obituary. That's already been written, that's already been done. But I did want to take a moment before the episode started just to pay tribute to my friend, especially since she is at the heart and soul of this episode, really. I've known Krista since middle school. I know her and her brother and her family pretty well. And she was even closer to my wife than she was with me. College roommate and a very dear friend. And the only one of our friends whose photo has ever actually hung in our bedroom. She was really an unbelievable person. One of those people that just kind of seems too good to be true in a lot of ways. She was top 10 in her class in high school. She lettered in 4 sports. She was a musician. She got an engineering degree and went on to work at Newark in Rhode Island, contributing to our nation's defense and working on just some really cool stuff. But that's all just kind of what she did. Who she was is really what made Krista special. Her motto was, you know, be your own kind of weird. And she did that, and she did it in spectacular fashion. She was one of those people who just sort of lived to make people happy, but wasn't afraid to pick on you and make you laugh in weird ways to get you there. She lived a life of just doing for other people, and she lived a lot more of life in her 44 years than I think most people probably do in 60. She traveled, she followed bands that she was a fan of all around the globe. Many of them ended up knowing her by name. She's got more pictures backstage with them, and she was just that kind of person. She had that personality, and you wanted her to be a part of your circle, and you wanted her to be where you were at all times, pretty much. She took to the show Supernatural. One of the things that we had in common was a love for that show, but she took it to a whole new level, as she was wont to do. She would travel to Supernatural conventions again around the world, and by the time she passed, the actors and the cast and the members of that show had a certain admiration and a love for her that was truly remarkable. They took a convention of theirs in Washington, D.C. last year when they found out about her condition and surprised her and changed their Supernatural convention to KristaCon, had her on the stage and got her involved and had a private dinner with her and her family. And it was literally just the brainchild of these incredible people involved with the TV show Supernatural and their relationship with her, and they turned this convention into a truly remarkable event for her. One of the last things she told me before she passed, I didn't get to go to that convention, and I'm probably one of the bigger Supernatural fans among her friends. So one of the last things she told me was she was disappointed I didn't go to it, and that I wasn't able to make the trip, but that it was the single most incredible experience of her life. And that she hopes everyone in the world feels that loved and gets to feel that way and know that the people around them truly do love and care for them in the way that she did. That was the big takeaway for her, was that everyone should feel that loved in their life. And it makes sense. If you knew Krista, that's where she would be. It wasn't just, wow, this was awesome, or this was a remarkable experience, or it was that everyone should get that opportunity, and that is a very, very Krista thing. Krista introduced me to Robot Chicken and to a lot of really good German beer and to a handful of some of the funnier moments in my life and some of the best memories, despite the fact that, again, she spent more time with my wife than me. But Krista was near and dear to my heart and to all of us when she left it. They left a really bizarre hole. And she's the first friend of mine I've lost to cancer. I've lost friends to quick death. I've never watched someone put up the fight that she did. And she really did fight it all the way. She was told she had weeks left to live at one point, and she fought for months and donated her body to the Dana-Farber Institute so that they could study and see why she lasted longer and really get more data and more information to fight metastatic melanoma, because that's who she was. She was the kind of person who was going to love unconditionally and serve other people with her whole heart because it made her happy, but she was also going to give the middle finger to cancer and do it in the name of science, and that was just her. So, Krista, we miss you. We all loved you very much, and we still love you very much. And, yeah, resist. On that note, thank you for listening to this episode. If you knew Krista and you're listening, some of these stories may be triggering, but I really hope that it just kind of brings a smile and helps you remember exactly how amazing our friend was. Thanks a lot. Go, Dad, go. Hey, everyone. Tom again. I did forget to mention the first time I recorded this that there is a scholarship set up in Krista's name. The name of the scholarship is the Krista Martin Band Geek Scholarship for Westerly High School. We're going to include the link in the show notes for that and a P.O. box to which you can also mail donations. If anyone is so moved, this is a scholarship. It's what she wanted. She wanted something that was going to help kids and, you know, again, continue her legacy of helping other people. So if anyone is so moved, donations can be made on the website that we will link in the notes or mailed to Krista Martin Scholarship, P.O. Box 1202, Westerly, Rhode Island, 02891. Thanks again for listening. Go, Dad, go. Welcome, everyone, to Two Dads Talking. Tonight is the pre-Thanksgiving recording. We'll probably release it sometime around Christmas. But you're welcome. Are working on getting these things edited and getting through production. Doug is putting in lots of hours, and he's kind of kicking ass, and I'm not doing my job and helping him. So you can blame me for not having these episodes yet. But he is working at it, and we are still recording. So hopefully you'll get this by Christmas time. And happy Thanksgiving.
I am kicking very little ass, for the record. I have discovered that I am very slow at editing. I've just been plugging away time. And for those of you out there who do some version of editing professionally, good for you, because it's just time.
It's what you meant to say was good for you, and what's your rate?
That's and also mean. Right. Does it start with an F for free?
Well, we're about, what, 15 episodes in now? Hopefully by now we're slightly better than free. Hopefully our negative numbers for putting this together are slightly less bad at this point.
It's like inflation. Inflation went down to a lower positive number.
Well, on that happy note, Thanksgiving.
I'm sorry. I'm not going to let you off the hook. We're going to get this right away. The ass ankle story. You have to start with that. Then you can do all the mumbo jumbo, family oriented, whatever garbage you want to talk about. But that is one thing I'm not letting you get away from.
So we teased this story last time, and I guess we're going to get right around to it. And the timing, I guess, is pretty apropos because it takes place in Munich, Germany, with a very dear friend to my family, especially to my wife, but also to me. Her name is Krista, and she was, unfortunately, by the time this is posted, Krista will have passed away from terminal cancer in the brain. Yeah, it's a good time to tell a Krista story, even if she was just sort of adjacent for it, not in the middle of it. Krista came out to visit in Germany when I was stationed there, and she spent about a year there studying abroad. She was an electrical engineer. She's brilliant. And she did some internships and some study abroad out there. So she was out there for a while, got to know the place, and came to really love Oktoberfest. So when I was stationed in Germany, she reached out and said, "Hey, I'm coming back out for Oktoberfest. Do you want to come down to Munich?" To which, of course, I said, "Hell yes." And my wife was already back in the States. We weren't married yet. At that time, we were affianced. And she was back in the States getting ready for me to get out of the Army. Krista came down to Munich and flew in, and she brought two of her friends with her, Aaron and Jesse. And I drove down to Munich to see her from Frankfurt. And we went out and, as one would do during Oktoberfest, got blitzed. Oktoberfest, if you haven't been, is an experience that you cannot do justice with words. It's one of those things you have to see, and you have to see it in Munich to really comprehend it. But I will do my best to paint the picture. Countless beer tents pop up all over downtown Munich, and beer breweries there just set them up and basically open up what we would think of as a beer garden, except each one is for like 800 people inside of a tent that they put up on the spot. And they serve giant pretzels, and they serve food on sticks and skewers and doner kebabs and the best beer. Most of it is a Märzen, some of it is a Pilsner, but typically it's a Märzen you get, and it's amazing stuff. It's so good. So we get down to downtown Munich, and we're trying to find a place to be. And there are no tables open in any of these tents. There are no seats. And that's pretty typical. Like, if you don't get a seat, you're going to wait a while. People who get them keep them for a long time. And at Oktoberfest, when Europeans and Americans and Asians and Africans, they all travel out for this thing. So you're getting an intercontinental experience. No one fights and no one is angry. Everyone is a happy drunk. It's like what the Olympics are meant to be with beer. It's amazing. There's not an experience like it. So we can't quite find a seat to sit at, and it's getting a little frustrating, and we all want beer. And to be perfectly frank, we had been drinking beer since before we got there, so we're already a little tanked. We reached such an awful point that her friend Aaron and I started walking around to tables where people were leaving like a third of a Maß of beer. A Maß is 1 liter, by the way. It's a giant beer stein that they serve out there. There were people who would leave like, you know, the bottom third of their beer in that cup and order another one and not finish it. We were swiping those off of tables and finishing people's beer. That's how bad we were. Like, this is not a brag. This is one of those. This is the lowest of lows in my life. Like, we were actually drinking the dregs of people's beer until we got a seat. Finally, somebody looks over, and Krista and I were both wearing Red Sox hats. And I think I had a Red Sox jersey on. And some gentleman looks over from Northern Massachusetts, and he goes, "Ah, you guys are Red Sox fans." I'm like, "Yeah." He goes, "Hey, we're getting up. You want our seats?" Yes. We basically bypassed everybody else in this tent looking for seats that had been waiting even longer than us. And this gentleman got up and gave us his seats as he left. So we sit down, and an inordinate amount of drinking commences. It might have been one of the top two or three drunkest moments of my life. We go walking out of there back to our hostel, and we're all staying in the same hostel. And we're walking down these walking. Yes. Well, okay, walking sure. is a generous term. But they've got these really beautiful, a lot like downtown Savannah, really beautiful cobblestone streets. You know, it's not an even surface. And drunk people probably shouldn't be walking on these things. But they've got these beautiful cobblestone streets. And we're walking, and everyone's talking. We're singing songs, and we're making jokes, and we're stumbling into each other. And I kind of lag behind. Something caught my eye, and I lag behind. And when I look, I've got like a 15-foot distance between me and the group. And all of a sudden, I think to myself, man, you know what would be great? If I got a running start and I put my whole body into an ass slap and just slapped Aaron so hard on the ass that I knocked him to France. And that was the thought that I had. And so I got a running start down this cobblestone sidewalk, and I put all my body weight into it, and I planted my foot, and I wound up, and I swung. And I'm a big guy, and I've got big hands. And I got Aaron on the ass so hard, he literally came up off the ground, and he still talks about this ass slap to this day every time I see him. However, I had a chronically injured ankle from my time in the Army. Lots of basketball injuries, a couple of ruck marching injuries, lots of other things.
Lots of ass slapping injuries.
This was the first ass slapping injury. First, maybe not the last, but the first. And what happened was when I slapped him so hard and put all that weight on my right ankle, we all heard this pop. And everybody thought it was him. We thought maybe I tore his pants. Like, that's what we thought had happened. Turned out it was my ankle. And the sumbitch swelled up like a goddamn softball in about 5 seconds. So we all go hobbling back. And it turns out I fractured my ankle slapping this guy's ass. But he had a handprint on his ass, apparently, for quite a while. He still talks about it. We go back to the hostel. We're all belligerently drunk, but having fun. Krista says something about robot chicken. And at that time, I hadn't seen Robot Chicken. You know, the internet wasn't quite what it was back then. It wasn't quite what it is today. And I was living in Germany. So if I wanted to watch something, basically, I had to wait for a DVD to come to the PX, and I'd buy it and watch it. I had no idea what Robot Chicken was. And she puts Robot Chicken into the DVD player that we had there in the hostel room. And There's probably only been about two or three shows in my lifetime that I feel like were made for me and my sense of humor, and that's one of them. It's pretty spot on perfect. Aaron's talking about his ass and how his ass hurts. He doesn't want to sit down on the bed. I'm crying about how my ankle hurts. Krista cracks some joke about, you know, only Tom and Aaron can, you know, go to Oktoberfest, and one breaks his ankle and the other breaks his ass. And as she's laughing about this whole thing, we're watching Robot Chicken. She just starts laughing at a scene. I think it was Skeletor and his breakfast burrito in the commuting car, which is an all-time great. If you haven't seen that one, go look that up. She's laughing so hard, she whacks her head on the windowsill next to the bed and splits it open. I mean, blood everywhere. Just, yeah. So we had to go find the Kroenke house, and we're taking a bunch of drunk Americans, one of them limping on a busted up ankle, one of them still holding his butt cheek. The woman in the group is holding her head, and blood is just seeping down from it. We're all drunk. Jesse was the only one who wasn't terribly injured at this point. He doesn't speak a word of German, so we're trying to get through there with me and Krista doing an awful job. And we get to the hospital, and they're just like, which one of you do we see first? Who's up first? And Krista was the only one that we saw, and it cost her like €7 or something stupid to get her head like stitched up and taken care of. But yeah, that's the ass slap story, where I literally fractured my ankle slapping a man on the ass. The alcohol didn't help prevent injury. It's, yeah, didn't work out.
That's amazing. That's like where Keeping It Real goes wrong or something. I don't even know.
I hope did Oktoberfest twice. And if you get a chance to go to Oktoberfest, do it. There's nothing like it. And there's nothing like it. It's just a blast. It is so much fun. Everybody is well-intended, and it's not like getting drunk in a bar here in America. It's a very different experience, and it's just fantastic. The first year we went, we're sitting and drinking and didn't really know anybody. Were four of us that went together. Me, my now wife, a friend of hers, and the guy she was dating. We all went down together and didn't know anybody else, and we're sitting drinking beer, and all of a sudden, this guy turns around behind us. So we're all sitting in these long, basically benches is what they are, like a beer garden. And this guy suddenly wheels around behind us so fast that I thought something was wrong. He says, ah, you Americans. Like, yeah, we're Americans. I love America. America's fucking great. Like, wow, man. Yeah, cool. I love Germany. He goes, ah, I'm from Italy. We come up for the beer festival. I'm like, yeah, we're here for the beer festival too. Yeah, I love America. America, I am a real American. And we're like, wow, that's the Hulk Hogan song. He stands up on the table and starts screaming the Hulk Hogan fight song. He's pulling his shirt up over his head because he doesn't have the muscle to tear it. But he's pulling it up over his head. Like the whole table, all of his friends, all like 14 of them from Italy, all start singing the Hulk Hogan song, jumping up and down on the bench at the table. They're hugging us. It turns out half of them are from Sweden. We're getting hugs. They're talking to us in different languages. We're all singing songs we don't know the words to. One of them says, hey, you want to smoke a cigar? We have cigars. I've never had a cigar. Sure. We wound up sitting around smoking cigars with them, drinking beer. They picked up the tab. It's a surreal experience. People go there to be happy. And you just don't have enough of that anymore. Like it's, man, go. If you get a chance to go, go.
Cultural is what it is, really. I mean, it's culture.
Yeah, yeah.
It covers a lot of bases.
Yeah.
I've never been. The closest I ever got to that with drinking was I found an Irish flag, wrapped it around like a cape, and then started walking around St. Patrick's Day doing all sorts of weird stuff. And I started getting called Captain Ireland at places, which I didn't know if was good or bad.
Yeah, I guess it depends on where you are.
Yeah, I think it was a compliment.
Wouldn't be in London.
Considering, no. I did manage to make it to London once upon a time, but that's about the extent of my culturing. Because I just don't count. I was on the Canadian side of Niagara Falls, and that just doesn't count. That's like leaning over the railing, being like, hey, everybody, look at me, and then jumping back.
I still want to see Niagara Falls. That's way up on my list.
It was pretty good. Just like went over the border just to see it, took the quick tour, ate at a restaurant that kind of overlooked them, and then drove back across border. So, I mean, today was the Rainbow Bridge thing. I have only seen the headlines, but Rainbow Bridge there between the U.S.-Canadian border, a car exploded in the middle of the bridge today. And so it was shut down at some point this morning, like Eastern time. And again, I've only really looked at the headlines, haven't really gotten into it yet, but there's some rumors now that it might have been some sort of attempted attack of some kind somewhere. Don't take my word for it, though. We'll see what develops as that comes out.
Plenty of bad news to go around in there.
I think they said there were two occupants in there, and they both passed away. They both died from it. So what do you want to talk about, Tom?
Well, today is going to be a day where I make all the other dads in the world and make them feel better about themselves. This is going to be one of those moments where if you ever screw up parenting, just remember there are people who have screwed up dadding before you, and there are people who've screwed up worse, and there are going to be people who continue to screw up after you. And you're probably going to continue screwing up yourself.
Yeah. I'm going to be supportive, too. If you remind me of anything I screwed up, I'll happily add it to the pile.
Yeah. And just remember that it's okay, because as awful as this story is going to be, at the end of the day, it's okay. At the end of the day, I've still got, God willing, plenty of years left of good dadding in me, and it's what it is. Do I start with context, or do I just get right into the situation? What do we want to do with this? Because the context is kind of like all the crap that put me in a bad state of mind and kind of screwed up what's going on here the last couple of weeks. And that might be kind of heavy. What do you think? Just skip it.
I mean, it's your story, bro. It feels like it's one of those things where after you tell the story, if it feels like it will help elucidate things a bit more, then you can add in what you feel like helps. But just tell the story. You know who doesn't care about context? Other people, most of the time.
That's true. So. I'm really the only, I care about it way more than the average Joe. All right. We're going to take this back to last Wednesday, exactly 1 week ago today. I was originally supposed to be out of town traveling for business, going to the lovely city of Newport News, Virginia, where I've got an entire backlog of history and backstories. Supposed to be there for 2 to 3 days, and then I was coming home. So we had arranged for my mother, who lives close by, to get the kids off the bus while I was gone. My wife can't make it home in time for the bus stop, so my mom was going to pick them up. My trip gets canceled, and instead of being able to come home and get the kids off the bus, I get roped into a 3 to 4 meeting that I really can't afford to miss. It's in the room with a bunch of people for an upcoming program that I want to make sure I've got my hooks into, and couldn't afford to miss it. So ask my mom, hey, you know, can you watch the kids after all? Can you still get off the bus Wednesday? I'd really appreciate it. Yeah, sure, no problem. It's in a passing conversation. The problem with passing conversations is they're often forgotten. So Wednesday, I dial into my meeting at 3 p.m. And I'm sitting there at this, again, fairly important meeting. And about 3:40, my phone rings, and it's my kid's school. It's the elementary school. And I think to myself, it's kind of weird the elementary school is calling me 40 minutes after dismissal. Uh-oh, what did my kids do? So I pick up the phone, and it's the principal. And I said, I'm kind of in a meeting, you know, what can I do for you? He says, I've got your kids here with me, and I couldn't get a hold of your wife. I'm wondering if you can come get them. Why didn't they get off the bus? He says, well, they got off the bus. Their grandmother wasn't outside, and the bus driver wanted to confirm she was home. So they went, and they went inside the house. And they said the door was open and the door was unlocked, but Granny didn't answer their calls and Granny didn't come to the door and Granny wasn't there when they walked inside the door. So they came back to the bus and they came back to the school. I said, okay, I'll be right there.
Good job, bus driver, by the way.
Yes, 100% fantastic job, bus driver. Thank you for not leaving my kids alone at a house. I was super happy about that. And also to the school itself. Fantastic school that we've got, small town, and the amount of care and effort that they put into our kids is just mind-blowing, and they took good care of my kids, and I was super happy the way everything worked out. That happy ending BS aside, if you know me and you know my background and you know I was a police officer and in a not so nice place, my first thought is the door to my mom's house was open. She didn't answer the kid's call. She didn't come to the door. She's never once missed that. She just had a knee replacement surgery maybe a month ago, so she's not at 100%. Oh my God, someone broke into my mom's house and hurt my mom, or mom fell down the stairs and is hurt. So I'm going, okay, well, I'm going to go over and I drive by her house on my way to the school from coming from work. So I'm planning this out in my head. I called my mom, didn't get an answer. I texted her, hey, call me as soon as you can. It's an emergency, didn't get an answer. So I'm driving and my plan is to stop at my mom's house on the way to the school and to go through the house at gunpoint, clearing the house, checking to see if everything's okay, if anyone's infringing me, And I'm already, as I'm driving, like mapping the corners in my house, like picking my route and deciding where I'm going to go and trying to decide if I'm going to call out and announce myself or how many times. I'm going through it all in my head. And I've got a plan. And I get about a block away and my phone rings. And it's my mom. I said, "Oh my God, are you all right?" She says, "Yeah, I'm fine." "Okay. Are you home?" No, I'm not home." Her sister-in-law, my stepfather's sister, had come into town and they were out with her. "Okay, do you remember you're supposed to get the kids today?" She says, "No, I thought I wasn't." And I said, "Okay, so we had a really significant miscommunication. Okay, no problem. No worries. I got this." She goes, "Did you have to leave your meeting?" Yeah, I left my meeting. I left it early. I'm not happy about it, but it's okay. I'm glad you're okay. I was worried you were hurt." No hard feelings. It was a miscommunication and misunderstanding. I don't blame her. I should have been way more clear, and it's what it is. I get my kids. We get home. No big deal. Apparently, when I called her, my stepdad was in the car and his sister, and apparently he was very upset with the call. And apparently he was upset that he thought I was accusing her of something. Okay, he's kind of a hothead. He's a 30-year retired sailor who is a drama queen. We'll call him that. We'll just say he's very dramatic. He likes to take little things and blow them up into epic fashion. This is just something he does.
So it's just the Navy.
It's, you know, we joke about it all the time, but I'm starting to wonder now that I deal with more and more sailors, I think they like fucking drama. I really do.
And let's be respectful. He's a drama king.
Sir. It's 2023. I don't know.
He's a drama Z.
Yeah, I don't want to make those assumptions today. Get in trouble for that. So apparently he continues to complain about this Wednesday night to my mom and his sister. And my mom says, "He's not mad. He's worried about his kids. I'm upset this happened. He's upset. No one's blaming him. Let it go." And he says, "No, that's BS. No one has a meeting at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a Wednesday and da 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 da." Like, I don't know where he's pulling this from. But essentially he comes out and says he thinks I was lying about this meeting and trying to take advantage of my mother's kindness. And she says, "That's absolutely stupid of you about my son. Like, that's foolish." But in this case, he hangs on to this for a couple of days. And on Friday morning, apparently tells my wife he's very upset about it. And then like breaks down in tears, like sobbing as she's dropping my kids off. He tells her he's really upset about it and the way it went down, and literally breaks down in tears, sobbing in front of her. Like I said, he's a dramatic individual. She shoots me a text and says, "Hey, if he calls you today, don't answer your phone. It's not worth it. There was a lot on my plate. There's a lot going on." She says, "If he calls you today, he's in a dramatic way. Don't bother. It's not worth your time. Not worth your stress." I said, "Okay. Yeah. Well, I guess I'll figure that out later." Well, he doesn't call me. I get home. I get the kids off the bus. I'm getting them ready to go to basketball. We've got basketball skill assessment for the fall league. And I'm getting them dressed and getting them ready to go. And he shows up. And the kids are super happy to see him. He just literally pulls in my driveway in a motorcycle, hops off. The kids run out and greet him. They're all happy. I have to rally them back in and get them to go back to get dressed. And I have no idea why he was dramatic. None of this has filtered back to me yet. He comes in and says, "Hey, Thomas, can I talk to you outside for a couple minutes?" I said, "Yeah, sure. What's up?" I go walking outside, put my shoes on, walk outside. And in my front yard in front of my house, he wheels around on me and says, "You owe your mother a fucking apology." I said, I'm sorry. You want to elaborate on this?" He says, "I am really upset about that conversation you had with your mother." Okay, why are you upset about a conversation I had with my mother? That's none of your business. If one of us had a problem with it, we deal with it. It's not your place to be mad about a conversation we had. You weren't a part of it. That's bullshit. You didn't have a goddamn meeting. You're lying to your mother and taking advantage of your mother. Whoa, I'm sorry. Do you want me to show you my Outlook calendar? Do you want me to show you the invites? No one has a meeting at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and da-da-da-da on a Wednesday. What are you talking about? My whole life has been meetings from like start to finish for the last 7 years. You kidding me? And he goes off in my yard. And I said, "You know what? I really kind of had it with this. I'm pissed off. Just get out of my fucking yard. Just go. You're not welcome in my house." And he gets back in my face and says, "No, you owe your mother a fucking apology. And now you owe me a fucking apology." And I lost my shit. I flipped out in a really uncool way. I screamed. I yelled. I pushed him out of my face. I told him to get the fuck off my property. I told him he wasn't going to see my kids again unless he fixed it and pulled his head out of his ass. We went at it in the front yard, ugly, ugly fashion. The whole time, as it turns out, my kids, as I should have guessed, were plastered to the living room window watching the whole thing go down. So I'm doing this in front of my kids, one of whom, my son, whom I love to the end of the world, has significant emotional control problems, and we are really aggressively working with him to get his emotions manageable and help him find skills to manage his, these emotional outbursts. And as we harp about it, try to find skills and try to work with him and really, really try to do these things, he's watching me have a meltdown in my front yard with family, with a gentleman who's 20 plus years older than me in my front yard. The entire exchange is way worse than I could get into here summarizing. But the crux of the matter is that for a good 30 seconds, I was trying to decide if I was going to shoot for a single leg or a double leg takedown to take him down on my front yard and drag him off my property because he didn't want to go. And it took every bone of control in my body to remember, this guy's like 62 years old. Don't do it. Don't, you'll hurt him. Don't do it. And I didn't. Kept control in that regard, but I did tell him to get the F off my property, that he wasn't welcome until he had an apology mustered up. He need not reach out to me, need not talk to me. He doesn't need to talk to my kids. I mean, it was pretty awful. And I did the whole thing, like I said, in front of my kids. And that's a real bad thing. For one, I go walking back into my house. He rips out of there in a motorcycle, tears up on my lawn a little bit, and just hits the gas and throttles out of there. First thing.
Wait, so he did some tire tracks in your lawn on his way out?
Yeah, just a little bit. It was just on the edge of the driveway. I really.
So it could have just been him like whipping around, not actually paying attention. Yeah, okay, just checking.
He didn't go out of his way to do it. It was just him at the edge of the driveway doing whatever. So I wasn't worried about it. But I walk back into the house. The first thing my son says is, "Daddy, I thought you were going to hurt Poppy. Are you going to hurt Poppy?" And when your kid says something like that to you, we had an incident not too long ago where someone was pissed off about something. There were a bunch of cars driving real slow, and I was stuck in this really slow line of vehicles. And we came to a red light, and the car behind me, someone got out of the vehicle and walked up to me with road rage and stormed up to my driver's side window. And I literally popped the door and said, "I will fucking end you. Get back in your car." And I was reaching. I was ready to put a hole in somebody if they were coming up in my car, because I don't know what he's doing. And my daughter was in the back seat, and I wasn't thinking then either. And I got back in the car. He got back into his car. The light turned green, and I drove off. Nothing happened. But my daughter brings that up every once in a while. "Daddy, remember when you told that guy you were going to end him? What does that mean?" And I get that question from her pretty often. Yeah. So after my son says, "You know, or I thought you were going to hurt Poppy, Daddy. Are you going to hurt him? I don't want you to hurt Poppy." My daughter says, "Daddy, are you going to end him?" Oh, God bless. So
I'm sorry, I shouldn't be laughing, but it's, you know.
No, I'm laughing at it now, too. If nothing else, it's a coping mechanism. But yeah, I had an emotional tantrum and explosion on my front yard with family, my kids watching full bore. And apparently not the first time I've done this. Apparently it's at least the second. And it was a moment of realizing that I'm changing the way my kids are looking at me, and I'm not setting the good example I want to set. And especially with my son, who really struggles with angry outbursts and emotional outbursts, it felt like a real failure. It was a real failure. I'm not saying I was completely wrong in what I did. You come to my yard and you accuse me of being unethical, and you accuse me of being a liar, and you accuse me of all the things that I was accused of with no evidence and no reason. It's not like anybody else was mad about this. Not one person was mad about this except him. There probably should be some sort of emotional response. So I'm not saying I wasn't justified, but I handled it very poorly in front of my kids. And one thing that I've kind of decided is that the way I handle things in life needs to be dramatically different if my kids are around. And then the more I think about that, it sets me on this, well, if that's the case, why not just always act as though your kids are around, and you'd probably be a better human being. You'd probably be a better person. And that's hard. You can't be on your best behavior all the time, I guess, but it doesn't mean you shouldn't strive to be. But yeah, no, that was, I had a complete meltdown on family in front of my kids a week before Thanksgiving. We're all going to their house for Thanksgiving. His sister flew in from England. Her husband was flying in on Friday or Saturday. Apparently, he's been acting all kinds of special all week. His sister told him that she didn't want to stay in their house while he was acting the way he was. My mom told him, "You're on thin ice. Like, I don't know what got into you." Like, they've had some issues. Kind of feels like I destroyed Thanksgiving. I shouldn't say I destroyed it, because certainly he provoked the whole thing. But I'm feeling like I destroyed Thanksgiving, which to me is the sacred holiday in the year. This is my holiday. This is my favorite holiday. My great aunt Anne used to come visit and spend Thanksgiving with us every year, no matter what. And when she passed, that was the closest family member I've ever lost. This is my holiday. And I botched it in front of my kids in a really, really big way and potentially ruined their Thanksgiving. We are going to try to go over there. And we're all going to suck it up for a day. And I'm going to hope we can get through a positive Thanksgiving. And I'll let you know how that goes next week. That'll be my follow-up story. The Turk apocalypse.
Wow.
Was any of that context, or was that just the story?
That was just the story. Okay. No. The context is all the crap that's got me in an extremely fragile state of mind. What the hell? Let's see if I can TLDR that.
Yeah, sure. Good work. Yeah,
I think I can TLDR it within the last couple months. As I mentioned, one of our best friends, terminal brain cancer, we've put every effort we have into kind of giving her all the moments that we can give her in the last few weeks that she's had. We've been putting a lot of energy into that, and that's been worth it, but taxing. One of my best friends, his father passed away last week, and we had his wake and his funeral this past weekend, 2 days after the outburst in my yard. My wife tore stuff in her leg and ankle and shredded it all up 2 weeks ago. We found out she's got to have surgery in December, right before Christmas. I'm having lung problems that, on top of everything else, just complicate life and make things hard. My wife's friend and colleague had an aneurysm on the way to work about 3 weeks ago and is in a coma. They're putting a drain in her brain to hopefully help her come to. Yeah, well, we'll stick with just that, actually. That's enough for right now. We're emotionally fragile in this house right now and not putting our best at, I shouldn't say our, because my wife is doing a fantastic job. I am not doing my best job keeping my stuff together in front of my kids. That's where we are, trying to eat all the grief for everybody in the world and not handling our own stuff very well.
So for those of you who don't know, because I didn't know for a while, I feel like some of our listenership could be like this. TLDR means too long didn't read. It's just basically when you load up a something and you see a bunch of text and you're like, I'm not reading all that, but I still kind of want to know what it was. That's what that was. Sorry, I'm going to be back in like 1 minute.
All right. I guess I'm going to monologue a little bit here just because I feel bad that I just dumped a lot of that on potentially anybody. If you are a listener of this podcast, and we don't expect that we're going viral. We don't expect to have a million listeners or anything. What we are hoping is that there are some dads and some other people that pick up the podcast and listen, that it's helpful to listen to, that Doug and I essentially getting our mental health time and just talking is helpful for someone else. If you're one of those guys and you're listening to the podcast, just know days like this are going to happen. I have a therapist I speak to. And one of the things that she mentioned is not every day can be a 10. You're going to have some days that are fives and sixes or threes, and it's okay to have those. Doug's back. That was fast.
The only question is what you said this time. That is a lot. Can I climb the ladder into my ivory tower?
Yes.
And give thoughts on it? Is that permitted?
It is permitted.
It sounds like there is a lot going on for him, for your stepdad. Probably has his own version of build up and other things happening, and probably something between them that's been developing too, because at least my knee-jerk reaction was this sounded like he was desperately looking for something to defend her honor. Yeah. Or to prove that he's devoted or something, like, you know what I mean, something like that. And testosterone can sometimes get the best of us at certain points in our lives. And I just wonder if that wasn't fueling that and just never let it go. And I mean, I just have to go off of what you've told me, but I think you're being a little harder on yourself than maybe you need to be. And let me explain. In school, we all knew that kid who it was Saturday night and you're like, hey, let's hang out. And they're like, no, I can't. I need to study for this test on Wednesday the next week. Otherwise, I'm going to fail. And that kid was always an A student, and in fact, may have had the best grade in the class up to that point, and in fact, probably could not study at all for the exam and get at least a B or a B plus right now. You, who are doing just fine yourself, you won't even start studying until Monday night, maybe at 11 o'clock, potentially. I don't know. And you just want that, you want that person to decompress a little bit. I've been developing this little theory in my head that there's versions of that ethically and morally too. People who at their base are good and or kind-hearted and or, I don't know what you want to call it, like justice-oriented or righteous, if you will, they are so quick to see their shortcomings when it comes to that thing. So you see an outburst like this as, man, I was such a bad example for my kids. What I think is, okay, maybe tone down the four-letter curse words a little bit, but he came to your yard. He instigated. He started with the energy. I don't know any of the past context here, but just any random person hearing this, do you turn your back on somebody like this who's come to your property unannounced and started a confrontation? Do you not meet them back with equal energy? Because if there is any sort of threat to you or maybe your property or whatever else, you have to make clear to that person that it's going to be a problem if they try anything. If you just walk away, you may instigate further. Even if they misinterpret quiet strength as some sort of cowardice, then you've sort of inadvertently escalated it further. So I'm not discounting your own feelings on this. You obviously know you better than most people. Obviously, your wife knows you better than you. But after that, probably you know you best. I think you're naturally hard on yourself because you, in short, you do give a shit. So continue to be hard on yourself, but at least give yourself a little caveat of you're not just doing this to show off. You're doing this because there's more than just your own ego at play here. There's your personal protection, your family's personal protection, your property protection. And like everything else, there's probably 18,000 different other things going on surrounding everybody in these events that are impacting it in a little way. So that's my knee-jerk reaction.
Yeah, I think if it weren't for my background, I think I would possibly agree. But I literally spent 4 years of my life with people throwing shit in my face and trying to provoke fights and trying to antagonize and bring that high-level energy to me, and got very good at completely tuning it out. Part of being a police officer in the city, people try to instigate you all the time. And you've got to tune it out. And I did, and I was good at it. It's one of those things I was always very good at. This is one of those situations where when I saw where it was going, I should have turned my back. He's not someone who's going to be a threat to me and my family. He's not someone who's going to stab me in the back when I walk away. It's not something he's going to come back and burn my house down. He's not a threat. He's an angry, insecure, frightened and upset person with emotional control issues, similar to me apparently, but with less control. I should have known to turn my back and walk away as soon as it got to shouting. I should not have elevated it beyond that. One of my favorite things, for those who don't know, I was also a school teacher for 2 years. One of my favorite strategies when I was a school teacher and the classroom got real loud and real unruly, a lot of teachers will shout over it. A lot of teachers will try to turn the lights on and off. I would speak really, really quiet. I would almost whisper. And it would force them to either quiet down or not hear what I said. And first time someone suggested this to me, I was like, yeah, that's going to work, right? And it turns out it does. Or at least for me, it did. It worked way better than raising my voice, because when I raise my voice, they just get louder. But it's something that works for me very well as a school teacher. And it reinforced the lesson as a police officer that, you know, when things get elevated past a point, the fire can only burn higher. You're never going to get bigger than the fire. You're never going to burn hotter than it does. All you're going to do is cause it to grow more. So unless you're willing to put it out with a boot stamp, then you need to lower your energy and let it ebb out. And I did a very poor job of that. I should have. If it was some random stranger, if it was the jackass who sold me my house who needed to be tackled in my front yard 5 years ago, that's a different story. That's a very different story. But this was not a total stranger. This is someone I've known for, gosh, 20 years. He is not a threat. And yeah, he's certainly in a bad place. And I should have been able to turn my back and show my kids that when something like this happens, you can turn your back. You can walk away. It's not a threat. You can leave it alone, let it take its own course. And if my son wasn't struggling with the things he's struggling with, I probably wouldn't be so hard on myself either. I think it's really the compilation of my past experience should have made me better than this. And I know what my son's struggling to do, and I'm trying to set an example for him, and that's not the example he needs. Otherwise, I agree with you. But those are the two reasons I really think I should have done better, and this is a failure.
Okay, fair. I mean, what you're really saying is it's an expected reaction. It's an unsurprising reaction, and you just wish you had been a little bit more extraordinary in a way, a little bit more measured than, I mean, what a typical reaction would be.
I wish I'd been bigger than my spontaneous emotions is what I wish.
Yeah. I mean, I've actually come to grips with this recently. Tom, I'll leave your judgment. Leave you to be the judge on this one, to your judgment.
I need to be a judge?
Yeah, well, I started to use the word judgment and it didn't come out right. And so I tried to switch to judge, but I still wanted to use the word judgment. And so that's why we're here right now. I will leave it up to your judgment as to whether or not this is actually some sort of humble brag. Back when we were dating, my now wife, we had a conversation one time that just got to like personalities. And I mentioned that I always felt like I was coldly rational. And I do mean coldly. If a raccoon ran out in front of me at any point during my life up to that spot and ripped a squirrel to shreds, something completely unexpected, violent, traumatic, gruesome, I would be like, whoa, man, that was aggressive. I wonder if they had beef later. Like, I really would just kind of. Part of my coping mechanism is snarkiness, humor, potentially, if you have a refined sense of humor like me. That's just who I am. And most stuff just rolls away. I handle trauma very well most of the time. And if you're just a regular person, a third party, even coworker, like who I've worked with for years, it's not that I don't feel bad. It's just that I don't feel it that much. Kid you not, a guy I worked next to, two desks over from for years, one day he's not there. He's always there. We find out at the end of the day, he had a heart attack last night and he died. And I'm like, oh man, that sucks. And it did not affect me for my actual work or anything like that. I felt bad.
It's and a memory. Ordered a double bacon barbecue cheeseburger on donuts.
Okay, so we know where your judgment's going. But that's just who I am. It's the phrase, it is what it is, on steroids, has kind of been how I've often been. And I got support from that from my now wife. She said, yes, actually, I like that about you because most other people get emotional about things and I like the fact that you don't. Now, fast forward, we're married, we have the occasional fight, and I am not that. And I think it's the circle. When the person means that much to you, everything that about them means more to you, even your emotions that they make you feel mean more. So where I'm going with this long-winded is maybe some of that is in there for you too. This is a guy who's obviously decades. Your mom and all that stuff. There's a lot of history there that's not going to be just who he is. It's going to be who he is to you and someone you hold dear. That's going to amplify things too. Add to the fire. I'm not saying it's like good. Oh, you're my wife, so I get to be more ragey now. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying you're a normal person. It's all right. You don't have to be abnormal or irrational all the time. You can be a real person. It's fine.
Oh, happy Thanksgiving.
Right.
I can't wait to file my report on how that goes tomorrow.
I'll be waiting. I don't think we're going to have anything like that, though.
I should hope not. Because now it sounds like you're trying to plan one out, and that makes it a whole different ballgame. That's premeditated.
Well, we talked about testosterone. Now I have to one-up you. It's a competition.
Did I tell you I finally shot my first Thanksgiving turkey?
You shot your first turkey?
Yeah, it scared the shit out of everybody else in the grocery store, but it was really fun.
Right. Got him. Never saw it coming.
He didn't move or nothing. It was great.
My reference with turkeys is it's one of the insults my father uses for people.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had a little, we'll call it a spat, with someone in our building that we manage. And my father just got so worked up at one point. He's just like, you know what? Those guys, what a bunch of turkeys. I can't believe My wife is sitting there going, trying not to laugh her face off because of just, she can't believe he just called them turkeys.
What a bunch of turkeys.
What a bunch of turkeys.
Some insults are just better than other insults.
I know. If someone was just like, Doug, you're such a fucking turkey, I'd be like, that was stupid. And then 10 minutes later, I'd be like, you know what? Fuck you, dude. Like, that was really mean. How dare you?
Yep. How dare you? I don't know how I would take that. One of my favorite, I've got really two insults that I really love that I use. And then I've got one that I really love that someone else uses, and I can't do it justice, so I don't use it. But I love when someone gives me the opportunity to call them a troglodyte. That is my favorite. And every single time I do it, they're like, fuck, is that a dinosaur? No, you just made my point perfectly clear. Thank you. Way to drive the nail all the way in there, buddy. But it happens almost every time. And that's fun. And then the other one is when I call somebody a dolt. D-O-L-T.
It's a good one.
It's a real good one. And it just sums it up. And it gets under people's skin. That's a good one. And then when Gordon Ramsay calls somebody a Muppet, that's one of the best things in the world. When you hear Gordon Ramsay just call somebody a Muppet, it's the best.
My favorite one, I don't even know if it's a real word, but I just say chotch. And I don't know if it means anything, but
I'm sure it means something.
Just such a fucking chotch. That one always gives me the warm and fuzzies when I get to say that one. One of the things in our family that we've been using recently, I looked at one of my daughters, I don't know, it was probably a couple of months ago now, and I just called her a doofus. And she was just doing something. Stupid.
This is good.
And of course the other daughter goes like they just hear a funny sounding word, and I was just like, no, you're being a doofus too. And in my stupid rational rage, I was just like, both of you doofuses, doofy,
doofy.
Mm-hmm. Well, and here's the thing, this is the nerdy part of me, guys. Latin, if you have a, I'm gonna have to slow down for this one, if you have a masculine word, it usually ends in a U-S when it's a noun. The plural version of that is an I instead of the U-S. And it shows through in other languages, I mean, especially Italian. So I decided to just change doofus to doofy instead of doofuses or doofuses. And now, whenever I do anything remotely silly, I have a small little girl going, Daddy, you're such a doofy. And it's kind of turned into our little family insult, so.
That's pretty cute.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't have a family insult. I should work on that. A heavy night. We're not funny tonight. We're just like heavy.
No. This was your night. This was Oktoberfest and ankle and...
Oh, gosh. I'm sorry, everybody. This was a me night, wasn't it?
So last time was me talking about my arrest, which, you know, listening to it afterwards, I was like, wow, I'm such a narcissist. I'm just listening to myself talk about something bad that happened to me.
That's funny.
I mean, the ankle stuff, all the times I injured my ankle, which all of them were basketball, but no one wants to listen to that. That's the high school hero sports story, except not. It's the, here's a random reference. This will encapsulate perfectly how I feel about these stories. When I was looking at colleges, and I was actually visiting Notre Dame just to see if I wanted to even apply, one of the professors, the staff, was giving the presentation to the students plus the prospective, the parents plus the prospective student. And someone asked if he had any advice for the entrance essay. And he just looks at everybody and he goes, listen, actually make it unique. No one wants to hear about your torn ACL in football. We guarantee we're going to get at least 8 of those every year out of every, 100 kids. Don't do that. You need to show why you're a real person. And so I feel like, oh, I sprained my ankle so bad that it's just, that's my torn ACL essay every time. The best part about that story is having to have the rascal scooter, the little scooter for a week. Man, I feel like I mentioned that before, but those are awful when you need them.
Yeah, I never got one. I was on crutches when I had my ankle surgery, and when I tore my PCL, like I was on crutches both times and never got to have a wheelie scooter.
I did crutches most of the time, but I sprained my left ankle for the third time so badly I couldn't walk on it for a period of time, and I was having real bad issues, and they were like, yeah, you actually should have a scooter. And when you're at college, that means everyone is coming by your room going, hey, Doug, can I ride your scooter?
Probably high as a kite when they asked.
No, I didn't. It wasn't that bad. It was so bad that I couldn't put any pressure on it for multiple days to get it to come down. But it got to the point where people wouldn't ask anymore. So then I hobbled over and took the key, and then people started asking again. And then I got sick of being asked. I just put the key back in. So I'd be sitting there in my room, and just every so often I'd just hear the scooter start up and take off. Someone has it now.
Hope you don't need to go anymore anytime soon.
One time I had to flag someone down and be like, go find my scooter. I need to leave for class. But yeah, there is almost nothing in my life that has been more humbling than not being able to turn around in the elevator.
That seems awkward.
Yeah. So as a self-respecting dad, pretty much every chance I get, unless there's going to be a reason to get into the back of the car, I always back into my parking spot.
Yeah, me too.
Because I'm a man and I'm a dad, and that's just the correct way to park. And we can have an argument about this as long as you want. I will not budge. So my faux pas days before being a dad, the seeds of backing up were in there, and I wanted to be able to back this rascal scooter even into the elevator. But it was just big enough to not turn around. And because it had to be like put into a corner to even fit for the doors to close, you pretty much had to push it in forward because it only had the one wheel on the front. So it got that extra like half inch to get past the door. So I wasn't even allowed to back it in because it would still hit the sensor. So for a whole week, doors would open. There'd be like 20 kids and they'd stop and stare at you, and you're backing up out of the elevator while everyone waits for you. That's humbling.
Yep.
A little sorry, awkward. Sorry, everybody.
Yep. As you back that ass up.
What I do. Forgot to mention, we're on episode 15 now. 14? 15?
I think 15.
This is why we need to start putting them out there so we can be like, no, it's this episode.
Yeah.
It's this one this time. Please rate us and review us. We do feel like every 35 minutes we have something constructive to say, and maybe it's helpful to other people, and that's not going to get as widespread unless you give us ratings and reviews. And remember, a bad review hurts Tom, and don't hurt Tom.
I don't know. Tom gave everybody like the super emotional, negative energy, feel bad for me kind of stuff tonight. I don't think I'm getting any votes tonight.
I would vote for you.
I'd vote for you too.
Thank you. So you're nice. Welcome. Everyone's so nice here.
We've just don't show there, up in man. My yard and make me yell at you, all right?
Well, I guess my Thanksgiving's free tomorrow. Well, we've all been there, though, really. I mean, and that's the hard part, because, I mean, family, close friends, those circles, I mean, they do hit other feelings. They do hit other spots in you because they are that important to you, and it's a force multiplier, like you like to talk about. I think it just makes you more human. Sorry.
Ugh.
Yeah. I know. I hate being relatable.
Dad jokes?
Oh, yeah, shit. Speaking of relatable...
Welcome to the dad joke section, where we redeem ourselves for being overly sentimental the rest of the podcast tonight.
It's okay. Forget about all of that just happened.
Yeah, just forget it.
Okay. Random reference. You should look up the, it's called The Trailer for Every Academy Award Winning Movie Ever. I think that's more or less the title of it.
What is it about? Global warming?
No, it's like a...
That was a joke.
You're a joke.
Yes, I am.
Chotch. Two, three, four, five minutes. It's one of those. It's not like terribly long, but it's more than 30 seconds. And it's these, I think it's this, it's probably like a comedy group or something like that. And these kids, these college kids got together and they did this trailer that's supposed to pump a movie, but it's supposed to be generic. So it starts with the guy standing there being like, and now I'm giving my toast at the fancy dinner party, establishing me as the protagonist, that everything works for me. And then it shows two women on the side, and one of them is just, ooh, like murmur of agreement. And then they have a part where they show scenes with the actors. But instead of saying names, it says like Academy Award winning actor, Academy Award winning actress,
actor desperately trying to win Academy Award. And it goes through the whole, this whole generic thing. It's really funny.
The first Deadpool movie does that with the opening credits. The second one did too. Right. They do a great job of it. It's
right. Fantastic. It's something like that. Where I'm going with this, and it won't ruin the whole thing, it's still worth the watch, but at the very end, they tell a joke and they all go, laugh, 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 laugh. Like that's what they actually say. And then the guy goes, see, it's not entirely a dramatic movie because we laughed there.
Nice.
And that's my brain. That's the reference that my brain was making. So we're doing dad jokes now. So it's not an entirely dramatic podcast because we're laughing here.
We're focusing on the fun and the happy and the lighthearted now.
Yes.
Grateful to finally have you say something because I've dominated the game clock tonight. It's not a good thing.
It's good. Time of possession is good. Speaking of, now I'm launching. Bills are 5-5 now. What the hell happened to them?
Yeah, I don't know.
You guys lost to them.
I know.
What's going on with you?
Honestly, also, I'm more upset about the loss to Kansas City. I think they should have beat that
team. Right? Oh, my God. You know, I don't know what to do with my hands right now as a Browns fan because we're 7-3. We've won games with three different starting quarterbacks.
Yep.
We just beat the Steelers with our rookie fifth-round pick in his second start. And, I mean, it was close. Don't get me wrong. I mean, the kids still need some work, but he didn't do terribly. And I saw a stat that was really weird for me. For those of you who are NFL fans, and particularly who pay attention to AFC, AFC North, you know, so Browns, Steelers, Ravens, Bengals, the most wins since 2020. That's important because that's when the Browns got Kevin Stefanski for their head coach. Like that was his first coaching year. The Browns are tied with the Steelers for the most wins against AFC North opponents at 13.
Wow.
And I mean, it makes sense that it would be all AFC North teams because they all play each other twice a year. But the Browns are, over the last 3/4 years, as good in the division wins-wise as anybody else. Yeah, but that's weird because we had this previous, 20-ish years where that was solidly not the case.
Well, Pittsburgh was so good for so long that they kind of threw off the bell curve a little bit there.
I'm going to say some blasphemy here about that. Someone in Pittsburgh, I'm not saying Tomlin, who made a deal? Because when they talk about like, they've only had three head coaches for the last 500,000 years. And they've all had winning records. And the last time the Steelers had a losing record, because they had an 8-8 record 1 year or whatever, the last time they had a losing record was like 1992 or something like that. And it's just like, who made a deal? And this year, they've been outgained, I think, in every single game of the entire year. And they're 6-3 or whatever it is right now, 6-4, 6-3.
6-4, I think, yeah.
They're the first team ever to be outgained in their first 9 games and I think have a winning record, much less have been like 6-3 at that point. They're just...
That's similar to what Minnesota did last year, right? Minnesota had a solid record, but overall they scored less points. Like their differential was negative.
Well, right. And the points is that there's all these statistics about how the Steelers, they're the only team to like basically suck but still win. There's like 3 stats like that about them halfway through the years. And they always do that every year, it just seems like. I mean, even the first game that they won against us, they got 2 like defensive scores. And they were semi-ish fluky. And they ended up winning by like 4 points. So,
what we're seeing this year is that a good defensive player to interrupt an offense creates a lot of opportunity for your team. Like Watt is phenomenal. I mean,
he's not. He's okay. Watt is. Oh, no. Oh, you know what? Bitch. Let's go.
He's got a little Garrett Wilson in him now, so he's all fired up.
Okay, we'll both agree on this. You ready? TJ Watt is kind of like Tom Brady. He's really, really good, but he's not greatest. He's not a GOAT. He's one of those guys where for his time, he's a fantastic player. But excuse me while I don't choke on his nutsack because he's not that good. I view Watt, TJ Watt, the same way as I view Tom Brady. I think people give him more credit than he deserves. I'm not saying he's not a bad player. I think he's a really good player. If someone came along and said, hey, Doug, I can basically turn you into TJ Watt, I'd be like, yeah, sign me up. Thanks. And I'll just make sure not to do that stupid fucking dance after every single play, whether or not I actually did anything or not.
don't get me wrong, he's a very good player, but people act like he's generational. He's not. He's not generational. You know who's generational? Ed Reed, Ray Lewis, murder charge aside, Polamalu. I actually think, sure, call me a homer, I do think Myles Garrett is generational. That dude
I think I called him Garrett Wilson, too. I think I went the wrong direction on that one.
He is doing stuff as a wide receiver that's, like, stupid already, just with the Jets of all teams. He's been real good.
Zach Wilson became his quarterback. I thought the sky was the limit for that guy.
I think Myles Garrett has the most sacks for his age or for, like, number of seasons in the league now. Like, first six, seven, eight seasons, whatever it is, he's, like, two sacks ahead or something like that of
a
Hall of Fame. He's stupid. So, I mean, I do think he's generational. TJ Watt is one of those greatest of his time. But people talk about him like he's generational. I'm not sure he's Hall of Fame level. He will probably end up there from a stat sheet perspective. I do wonder how much of that is a little bit of the help from guys like Highsmith. Like, I would make an argument that for the Steelers, Alex Highsmith is far more instrumental and important than TJ Watt for just their kind of play. I think TJ Watt gets a lot of cleanup stats based on what they do with their front four.
There's a decent argument for that. I think you're wrong. I think he is a stud. I do agree that he's not the greatest of all time, and there we agree. He's one of those guys who is dominating his era, but I think 10 years from now, if you ask me who all the great defensive ends or pass rushers were, like, he's not going to be a name that comes to my head. And so I agree with you there.
I could grant that maybe you could make an argument that he's top 20, 30 of all time when it's all said and done.
I mean, he doesn't really have a lot of records, so that argument is probably there.
That's the thing. How do I say this? Stats don't mean everything, but they do mean something. So if you finish your career with 100 sacks and I watch every single one of those sacks and I genuinely think, well, 50 of these were sort of dumb luck or created by another guy or it wasn't really all you or mostly you. With how much football has been played, how many players have played, the fact that you somehow ended up in the right spot 50 more times, that would indicate some sort of extra football intelligence or something. When you get into the mathematics of it, you can't dumb luck something, even one out of two, 30 times, because now you're getting two to the 30th power. So there must be some sort of skill there that doesn't show up even on the tape somehow. So if the guy gets the stats, I'm not going to sit there and say he's a loser. I'll still grant that you must be some sort of high-level great just from getting the stats, because it's impossible to get it without being some version of really good. But I just don't see him being, and that's how I feel about Tom Brady. I feel like Tom Brady is really, really great, probably top 10 quarterback of all time great, but people call him the GOAT, and I just don't see it. I don't see it. And Tom, you're still sitting, right?
Still sitting.
I don't mean like you should stand up and fight me. I just mean I'm going to say something that might be shocking to you. For those of you listening, and I'm getting into my meditation phase, so I need to calm myself because Tom Brady automatically increases my heart rate 27 beats per minute every time I talk about him.
I love bringing up Tom Brady with Doug in all these other places. It's so much fun.
So let's put it this way. I cannot raise one eyebrow on my own, but Tom Brady makes one of my eyebrows twitch.
Not the whole eyebrow, just the middle third.
Just the middle. I used to think that Tom Brady was great because of Bill Belichick. Tom's heard it before. I have lots of substance behind it, all the way from like Matt Castle going 11-5 to what's his face? Tampa Bay. Why can't I think of the coach's name, the head coach?
Bruce Arians?
Thank you. Jesus. Wow. I'm sorry, Bruce. You are like a rich man's Charlie Weiss. I love you to death. I'm so sorry I forgot your name. He went to Bruce Arians and people were like, oh, look, see, he's still great. And I'm yeah, because he fucking went to Bruce Arians. Oh, man, look, he's still great. He got like, I'm having a night tonight.
All right.
Andy Reid. It's like if you went to Andy Reid instead of Mahomes and people, go, oh, look, Tom Brady's so great. Yeah, of course he is. What did you do, Tom? Yeah, there's a similar picture of that with Charlie Weiss, just saying, where he's like got the four or five Super Bowl rings.
Charlie Weiss. For those not on the video, I just texted him a nice little gif of Tom Brady.
Showing off the rings. And so I used to think that Tom Brady was great because of Bill Belichick, because of the whole Deflategate and all that and all the statistics behind that. I was sitting there thinking, okay, Tom is great, but he is in the argument for best ever because of Bill Belichick tipping the scales for him with the cheating and all that. And this is where I asked Tom if he was sitting. I'm starting to wonder now if Bill Belichick is actually great because of Tom Brady, because he's not carrying his water anymore. And I don't know if he's just old dude who knows he's on the twilight and he's just doing the last couple of years thinking that every year he coaches is another 2 years of retirement. I have no idea, but Brady did continue to do well in every situation he was in. And the TJ Watt thing brought this up for me, was that the stats do show that there is something there, whatever it is. I'm still not going to call him the GOAT. I can't ever bring myself to that. And you know what, Tom, if you're listening, Big Tom, your little Tom, Big Tom Brady.
TB12
Tom.
Yeah, I'm sure he's one of our listeners.
When you're in...
I heard
in,
Giselle saying that was the reason they broke up. Excited with anticipation in 30 for years, podcast. You couldn't
30 years from now, when you're hearing this episode randomly on your deathbed or something.
You think he's going to be on his deathbed in 30 years? I mean, you must have missed something.
If he wants something to make him go and slip silently into the night, then he should turn us on. That'd be
30
good.
Years from now, he's still going to be flirting with unretiring and winning a Super Bowl.
Yeah, with whom?
Hopefully the Dolphins. Hopefully they're still a franchise by then.
If you are the greatest TB12, Tom, since you're listening to me now on your deathbed, let this comfort you. Bill Belichick fucked you, dude. He muddied your waters. And that is the best you're ever going to get from me. I can't call you the greatest, if nothing else. If you come out of retirement and win the next 4 Super Bowls, I still will not call you the greatest because of Spygate. I just don't know. I don't know how much of your performance was... If I find out Connor Stallions is your nephew or something, then you're definitely not the greatest. There, said it.
Yeah, I think that's one place we'll disagree. I think he is probably the GOAT. I think he is certainly top 3 of all time. And I think if you don't put him in the top 3 category, you're probably a hater.
I'll put Patrick Mahomes ahead of him right now.
I think by the time Patrick Mahomes is done, I think he's going to be the GOAT.
Yeah. And again, I don't feel like I'm a homer for saying this. It's going to be hard for me to get off of Peyton Manning, pun intended, being the GOAT. I mean, there are guys who win more Super Bowls. I mean, you can talk about the Joe Montanas and the Steve Youngs and all that. And I'm not trying to discount those dudes, Joe Namath. But from
I'll discount Joe Namath. He's not one of the top 3 quarterbacks of all time. I'm sorry.
Just because you won a lot of Super Bowls, that doesn't mean anything to me. Because these same guys, and I know it's partly for the cameras, but when you're the quarterback and wow, man. Hey, let's do dad jokes. We're almost done with this episode. What's that? TJ Watt or Tom Brady? To let's just start talking.
We're going to change the podcast into Two Dads Talk Football and edit all the other shit out.
We have non-football and then football.
The non-football will be a lot shorter than the football.
Slash Doug ranting. Shit, what were they going to fucking say?
Something with the TB12 tattoo you were getting this weekend.
No, and there's still time for me to not lose fantasy, so that's definitely an extra whammy. Shit. Fuck, Tom.
I have no idea.
I don't know either. Oh, sorry. Okay, back. We're back. And we're back.
We're not fixing that post. We're going to leave that awkward silence in there.
I'll shorten it a little bit because studies show that if you have 1 to 2 seconds of silence, people start to lose focus in a conversation.
What was that?
Exactly.
Huh?
God, I hate you. I'm going to shorten that to 2 seconds, too.
You hate that you love me.
Yes, I do, unfortunately, for both of us. It is said, and I actually agree with this, that being a quarterback in the NFL is the single hardest position in sports. The reason I agree with that is because you touch the ball every play. Even if your job is just to hand it off, you have something that you need to not fuck up. It sounds stupid, but like for your average person watching football, when you're just handing the ball off, there's a lot of practice behind that. Which foot is going backwards first? How many steps into the leadoff? You have to know with that particular running back if they have little tendencies about, you know, they put their arms up chest level or belly level. Again, it looks simple, but when the quarterback snaps the ball and he turns around and pitches it to a running back who's already running to the right, you know how they did that? They did that because they practiced that, the two of them, 150 times in team practice. And then after practice, the two of them sat there and did that 100 or 300 or 500 more times just between the two of them, just so every single time it was, the ball was exactly there. So
and being read a quarterback, option plays don't make it any easier because now sometimes you're pulling it out of their belly. You're
right.
You're getting there and you're pulling it back.
The running back has to try to grab it, but sort of let it be taken from him and all that. Like there's all the, even just in something like a handoff, there's a shit ton of practice that goes into that. So when you're the quarterback, you touch the ball every play. There is something for you to fuck up every time. And there's really big, strong, mean mans coming after you every single play. And sometimes there's more of them coming after you than there are people to stop them. And there's trust issues here. Like you have to trust that your guys will block them / they're all professionals. So they're not going to be able to block them forever. So, and then you have to look down the field and be like, okay, that guy's going to intercept the ball if I throw it there. And you have to have the pre-snap stuff of, okay, they're in zone coverage or they're in man coverage. So I automatically know this guy is not going to be open. Maybe he is open, but I have to make the absolute perfect throw to get it there. And all this stuff goes into this position. So I do actually think it could actually be the hardest position in sports. I don't actually think it's the ultimate team sport. I think hockey is the ultimate team sport. Really short version of that discussion is that MVPs in the NHL average 40% of game time. And when your absolute best player is only on the ice for less than half the time, that tells me it's a real, actual, true team sport. Depth does matter more there than even in something like football. But every single play in football is a team thing. You're handing it off to another guy. You're throwing it to another guy. Other guys are blocking. On defense, I mean, hell, every single defensive success is pretty much everyone doing their job. TJ Watt doesn't get his sack if the defensive lineman can't do shit. And the cornerback doesn't get his interception if TJ Watt isn't getting there and creating pressure. So there is a whole lot of team aspect to it. So where I'm going with all of this is that's why Tom Brady can't be the greatest, because he's got the muddied waters with the Spygate stuff and knowing that it wasn't always just strictly him. And then you have a guy like Peyton Manning. For someone like me who views football through this lens of just, it's not just the amount of Super Bowls you won, it's the lens of all this stuff is happening every play. And has there been anybody else like Peyton Manning who is allowed to be the offensive coordinator on the field, literally? The stories go from multiple offensive coordinators, not Peyton Manning, multiple offensive coordinators who said, yes, most of the talking in the locker room at halftime is Peyton. They don't exactly say that he is taking control, but they basically say like it's an even relationship. When Peyton was playing quarterback, he was like equals with the offensive coordinator and they were strategizing together. He was not just advising them on what he saw. I read this article one time where it said specifically that the Colts playbook had, it was some number like 1,026 or 1,052 or something like that, but over 1,000 different plays. And Peyton knew all of them, and he was able to audible to any one of the plays in their entire offensive playbook on the field. And that was both a blessing and a curse, because it meant that when they went to draft guys in the NFL draft, one of the things that weighed on the Colts more than other teams was guys' literal intelligence. Because they could not draft guys who could not memorize the playbook and the audible that went with it. So the receivers and other guys on the field had to also know, at least with certain audibles, exactly what play was being called for them, because there was 1,000 plus. And so knowing that there was a guy like that on the field, able to basically hold and manage and command 1,000 plus plays at any point during the game, it's hard to come off of that guy as being the greatest, because you want to talk about pure football skill set. That has to factor into me.
All right. So Peyton Manning might be the greatest offensive coordinator of all time. I'll give him that.
Who played the game while he was offensive coordinating.
Sure. Sure.
And that's why these discussions happen. What makes the greatest of all time? Part of LeBron's case for the greatest of all time, when you talk about the NBA, And now I'm probably going to make an ass of myself because Tom knows way more about the NBA than I do. But people say MJ is the greatest of all time because he was the ultimate clutch player. When it mattered most, when his team needed X, he got it. And other people say LeBron is the greatest player of all time because the dude has, he is sort of like a Peyton Manning of basketball. That dude, you could tell if you started watching, he knew where everybody was on the court at all times. He knew it. It was just a question of execution. He knew if one of his teammates was sprinting up the left end of the court, even if his back was turned, he somehow fucking knew it. And that is something you cannot coach, you cannot teach. That's an actual basketball IQ. And back against the wall, gun to my head, I would probably tell you I still think Michael Jordan is the greatest of all time, but it's more because of just efficiency. He had fewer finals / playoff chances and he got it. But if you were to ask me who the best basketball player was, I'd probably tell you LeBron. If you just said, hey, in a vacuum, Doug, you get to be transformed into the greatest basketball player of all time per your choice, I would ask to be LeBron. I would not ask to be Michael Jordan. But from results-oriented perspective, I think Michael Jordan is the greatest so far.
I love that argument. And I have that argument with people all the time. You know, who's the greatest? Is it MJ? Is it LeBron? And I totally respect the argument for either one of them.
You're going to say something different, though.
No, I'm not. I think if you're looking for the best of all time, it's
that's not interesting.
Sorry.
You're supposed to say Karl Malone, damn it.
No, the mailman is not it. He was good. He was not it. He was not the one. If you're asking me who the best basketball player of all time was, Michael Jordan. I think he had a killer instinct. He had that Black Mamba instinct before Kobe had it. He was precise. Yeah. He had an intensity. He had a fire in him. Where LeBron's looking to flop and get that call and is mad when he doesn't get it, Jordan was playing in a rougher league and he was going through people, getting fouled, and was going to score anyway, and he didn't care. And it was that mentality, I think, that made him better. And also,
that dude dug deep, in a different kind of way.
Warrior, that guy. Yeah. You look at old footage of him just getting obliterated as he goes to the rim and still puts it in, and he's talking trash. It's amazing you watch his stuff. But I also think Michael Jordan saved the NBA. That alone probably makes him the GOAT. Because the NBA was falling in ratings. They were declining. The athletes were kind of doing the same thing they'd done for years. And here comes this guy who says, you know what? I didn't make my high school team. I'm going to lift weights and I'm going to be strong and athletic. And I'm going to do this through muscling up on people and just making myself tougher. And he brought a commercial appeal to the NBA that didn't exist before. There's a reason Air Jordans are the thing right now. He was the guy that was marketed heavy. He became the first, as far as I remember, the first real face of the NBA. And he did it well enough that he is still doing things today. And I think that's why he's the GOAT. I think when they were struggling for popular appeal and they were really, really having a hard time growing their industry, his was the face that put them over the top and got them there. So his talent, I would take his individual talent over LeBron's. His marketability, I think, saved the NBA. But if you were telling me that I got to build a basketball team and I got to pick all my players and build my own roster with anybody I wanted, I would take LeBron first.
Yeah.
Because I think he does more and I can build a better team and he's a better team player, I think.
Like from a physical standpoint, yeah.
But I think I could build a more dominant team around him than I could around MJ.
Yeah. The football equivalent is 2 minutes left in the game. You're down 4 points. Who do you want at quarterback? If you're picking one whole game, you're like, oh, Aaron Rodgers in his prime. But if you're picking last 2 minutes, you need one drive. I mean, now I actually am talking about Tom Brady from an end of drive perspective. It's a different answer. And I think if you're the 2 minute version of the final stretch of a basketball game, I think you want Jordan. If you're talking about just any whole game or any whole season, you probably pick LeBron first. Here's a fun thought project. LeBron and John Stockton on the same team. I struggle with that one because I don't know if that would work because Stockton was kind of strictly a point guard and LeBron kind of does the point guard thing to take over so often. But if you could convince a LeBron physical specimen to let Stockton be the point guard all the time, I wonder if you couldn't have something like ludicrous happening there.
You probably could. Stockton is, he's sort of the epitome of the point guard position to me.
That dude was good. I mean, like I was watching the NBA once upon a time for Jordan, but I started watching for Stockton at one point too, because that dude was good. Different kind of good. He saw things better than most too.
I don't know the name of it, but we can Google it and find it. It's old time fantasy basketball. I don't know what it's called, but you can go in and draft anyone you want from all time against people, and they simulate the game. So you get to pick your roster. We used to do that for fun. We did it with football. We did it with basketball.
Figures.
But give me Kevin Garnett and LeBron James and Shaq in the paint, and then give me really pretty much any two shooting guards up top. Then I'm going to be.
I mean. That's a good simulation. I would pick Shaq for the paint, and I would make sure I got AI.
See, I would not want AI, but it makes sense to pair them together. You pair them together.
I'd pair them together and then put a Stockton type in there, because Stockton can benefit both of them, where they both get to do their thing.
See, I look at basketball the same way I look at poker in a lot of ways. I feel like the best way to win, the best way to get an edge, is to have a bigger decision tree that you can leverage against people, to be more intelligent and have more options, and then be able to pick the best one against people when it fits. And I think when you have a point guard like AI, your decision tree shrinks, because the ball doesn't come out of his hands until, you know. So the decision tree on defense is much simpler. It's okay, well, now he's the point of attack, and we know he's coming all the way to the rim if we let him. We know he's probably not going to pass, so you just double him. You play a box and one. You simplify the defense's job. I believe it's better to have more decisions available to give the other person a chance to make a mistake, and then to pick the best thing to take advantage of. It's boxing and poker and basketball are all kind of the same to me in that way.
Well, see, with boxing, I would agree with that point. With poker, I would semi-agree with that point. With basketball, though, I mean, when you pick arguably the best guy with that kind of thing, with that kind of position, it's kind of like a win condition. Yes, it simplifies the defense, but this guy is going to win 35% of the time or 40% of the time. And when you pair that with another high win percentage, it's simplified, but it's an identity thing.
Best of the best on the other side, I would agree with you. But you're also picking the most elite players of all time to be on the other team. So it's not like he's playing a normal NBA team.
You know? I guess.
It's not like Tyreek Hill is taking advantage of someone slipping up, putting a linebacker on him. This is still an elite guy that's going to be guarded.
You know who I would pick for my all-pro NFL defense? Minkah Fitzpatrick, because he would just injure whoever the hell is on the other side. You want to win the game? He'll just injure him.
That's fair. That's accurate.
Oh, why'd you pick him? Because he's got a good skill set? No, because he hurts people. Because
he ends games, damn it.
He always seems to be in on that low hit, it seems like, just for some reason. Or that's why you pick Ndamukong Suh.
Yes, that man.
Because that dude is dominant and also is kind of not exactly legal with all the stuff he does. I mean,
not even that close to the line. Hold on. He was stomping on people. I mean,
it's fine. Okay, but see, you know what? Damn it, Tom, I have standards. I will not pick Albert Haynesworth with his firearms charged, but I'll pick Ndamukong Suh, because at least they're wearing helmets when he's going after them.
You conveniently forget about Joe Mixon's firearm charges when you want to.
It's fine. We haven't even gotten to Vontaze Burfict yet, so let's...
And eventually it's going to get to Plaxico Burress, and then I get to tell my story about the guy who wanted to shoot me and shot himself instead. Yeah, it's going to go...
Oh, my goodness. So let's do our dad jokes.
Dad jokes. I've actually got two of them today.
Oh my goodness. So do they have to be told back to back?
They do not. No. One of them is a true dad joke, and the other one is probably not as much a dad joke as something that I saw and loved and was like, yeah, I got to share that.
I came into this with only one. I could probably come up with a second one too if needed, but I'd have to dig a little bit.
That mean you want me to start?
Yeah, because you have two.
The voice trailed off. The eyes wandered off screen. All right, so we've talked about all the nonsense going on in my life already. And one of the thoughts that I had, I'm the one who says grace every year at Thanksgiving dinner. That's kind of always my thing. Part of it is, you know, me wondering, what am I going to be thankful for this year? And how do I, amidst all the family drama and the chaos, come out of this with the focus of Thanksgiving Day really on the forefront? I decided in the end that I was actually thankful that the Native Americans shared turkey with the pilgrims on this day, you know, forever ago. Instead of donkey, because if they had shared donkey with the pilgrims, then we'd all be eating ass on Thanksgiving. So I'm thankful that they shared turkeys. Come on, that's pretty good.
All right, fine. That was good, I guess.
You'll think about it tomorrow as you're carving the turkey and going, I'm glad I'm not carving ass. Damn it, Tom, you're stuck in my head.
What, you really should have brought that joke around to stuffing?
I should have, yeah.
Stuffing the ass.
My next stand-up is going to be March. Maybe I'll work it in there for a belated.
You'll work the stuffing in there?
Joke. Yep.
All right. Knock-knock joke. You ready? Why are there no knock-knock jokes about America, Tom?
I don't know. Why are there no knock-knock jokes about America?
Because freedom rings.
That's sweet. All right. Joke number two. This is the true dad joke. A little boy on Thanksgiving Day is playing outside, and he sees a bug, and he wants to step on the bug. But his father, who's a vegan, sees him and walks up and stops it. And his vegan father says to him, you butternut squash that.
Yeah.
That's a true dad joke.
That was another good one. That was another one where I was just like planning where you were going with it. And then when you said butternut, I was like, oh, here it is. It's happening right now. So
good. Happens fast.
That was good.
We live in the fast lane here.
In the carpool lane.
With Skeletor and his breakfast burrito.
Yeah.
I love that show.
I love that show too. My God. You saw the thing about the Starbucks logo, right?
I don't think so.
How they wonder how the Starbucks logo came up with, because there's the original with the holding the fish, but they did a different one where they said, we still can't decide if we're going to be a company that offers coffee or mermaid porn. And they get some girl to walk in a mermaid costume and she holds up the fins when they take the picture, and light drops on her and she dies, and they're just like, oh, this is someone's child, and he goes, we'll crop it.
My favorite ever was the darkest skit bit that they did with the Tooth Fairy season, like probably one or two.
I don't know. I've seen a lot of Robot Chicken. I can't claim to have seen all of it because I can't confirm that, but I would be surprised if I didn't see it at some point. What is this one?
This is the Tooth Fairy showing up to a house, trying to, you know, take the tooth from the pillow and leave the dollar. And while she's in this child's room, mom and dad engage in the middle of a domestic dispute downstairs. And it's loud and it's awkward. And it's like, the Tooth Fairy's like backing out of the room like she didn't hear anything.
Oh, no. I don't know if I've actually seen this.
They come back later and they do it again, and they do it a third time. And in the third time, the dad walks into the kid's room and he's like, we're going to Disney World. Trying to get the kid out of bed. Then the police show up and you see the sirens and the lights in the window and the sirens. And they're like, put your hands up, come out of the house. And he's like, I just off the fucking Tooth Fairy. You think I care about you? Come on in. It's great. It's fantastic. They've got like four iterations of it in the same episode. And it just gets progressively better.
Man, I haven't seen that one then, I don't think. It's not ringing any bells. I feel like it should. Yeah, it should ring some bells.
YouTube. Robot Chicken, Tooth Fairy, Darkest Skit, it'll pop up. It's fantastic.
I will.
All right, on that note, we really are going to end this.
Don't talk about Tom Brady.
All right, well, thank you all for listening, especially TB12. Thank you for tuning in.
30 years from now.
We do appreciate it. 30 years from now, listen. If you're enjoying this, Tom, feel free to, you know, set up a Patreon account for us and donate $1 million. We appreciate it.
Give or take.
30 years from now, it's going to buy like a happy meal.
That's going to be worth like $8.
Maybe. Thank you for listening. We appreciate, like Doug said, find us, like us, rate and review. All
don't hurt nonsense. Tom or Doug.
Don't hurt Doug. Tonight, Tom waxed on way too sentimental. Go ahead and hurt Tom. But don't hurt Doug, because Doug's a good guy. We like Doug. And we will talk to you guys next time. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.